Welcome to the More Perfect Union, a podcast about the joy we get from American politics, or as we call it, real debate without the hate. I'm Emily Brewer, a Republican from Virginia.
I'm Cliff Dunn. I'm also a Republican from Virginia.
I'm DJ McGuire, a conservative Democrat from Virginia.
And I'm Kevin Kelton, a moderate Democrat living in sunny Los Angeles, California. And joining us tonight on the podcast is Gene McCormick. Gene is a former journalist and one-time chief researcher at the ABC News series Nightline. She was also the president of the Harvard Business School Women's Association, and she was a visiting scholar at Wesley College's Center for Women, working on issues involving women in sports. Hi, Gene.
Hi, how are you doing?
Great. Want to tell us a little bit about your political background and partisanships, if you have any?
Sure. Well, you know, being a journalist for many years, I am independent and I try to look at things from both sides. Being a former journalist, I've voted on both sides of the aisle. More recently, I have tended towards the Democratic side, although I did actually vote in the Virginia Republican primary, but I was pretty hardcore Hillary this last time.
Great. And Virginia is very well represented in today's show.
Yes.
And with over a quarter of a million downloads to date, the More Perfect Union podcast is one of the fastest rising podcasts on iTunes. The More Perfect Union podcast can also be found on iHeartRadio, YouTube, and at our website, moreperfectunionpodcast.com. So, ladies and gentlemen, I think the big information this week was desinformation. I didn't even pronounce that right. DJ, how do you say it?
Desinformatia. The only Russian I know, so there we are. Essentially, the CIA updated their briefing on, updated a secret briefing, as I understand it, on the Russian influence in the election, and particularly spreading disinformation, desinformatia. And it was leaked out to the press that the CIA's opinion is that Russia did it not just to undermine the process in general and create all sorts of funny business, but specifically because they preferred that Donald Trump would be elected, and they did it for that goal. There are already some counter leaks, if you could say, today that are not necessarily challenging it as much as maybe shading that a little and saying that the CIA was not quite that certain and that other intelligence groups are themselves not that certain. But I think it's abundantly clear that Russia, in particular the Putin regime, had a lot of fun with our election this year. And what I am hoping, my new party, because of course I've only been a Democrat for about 5 or 6 weeks now, takes a look at this and recognizes that this is not the kind of thing that we can, that just stops at election day or even here on our shores. Russia made these kinds of moves because they had the geopolitical space and geopolitical strength to do so. They thought they could get away with it in some way, shape, or form. And I think that's largely because they have, in their own minds, been relatively unchallenged in Crimea, in the frozen statelets, to a lesser extent in Syria. Their rearmament of Kaliningrad has gone largely unnoticed, let alone undiscussed. They've had their antics in the Baltic Sea and with the Baltic states, and they really haven't gotten much outside of stern lectures from this administration. And I'm hoping that the Democratic Party, as we move out of power, we recognize that that probably wasn't the wisest thing to do, and that there are things far short of straight military action that we could have done to frustrate Russia's ambitions in Eastern Europe and in the Middle East. And if we were not willing to do them during the Obama administration, perhaps we are willing to do them in the 2020s during what I hope is the next Democratic administration. If we're willing to be more robust with our foreign policy, then the 2016 loss will not have been in vain.
Okay. So leaving out what didn't happen before 2016 and what may happen in 4 years, where are we now? Emily, what's your take on this? And as a Republican, what do you think should be the next step?
You know, I think this is just a chaotic situation, and I think we probably won't know for quite some time how this is going to play out. There's so many what ifs in the situation, and you know, I'm really interested actually to also hear what Cliff thinks on this, because I think we think a little bit differently on these kind of topics.
Yeah, I mean, I think the broader issue that we have, and I kind of shudder to say this, is it's an internet problem in some respects. I mean, we've had the last couple of years where the Chinese have been hacking getting, you know, everybody in sight as far as I can tell. And now the Russians are getting in on the game pretty aggressively. I do think we're going to see more of this as time goes on, for the simple fact that, you know, the encryption systems that you have out there, even a good encryption system, can be smashed up pretty effectively right now. And there's not, and so whether it's through WikiLeaks, whether it's actual government agencies, or whether it's disgruntled insiders, I think we're going to see a, you know, I'll put this in quotes, information wants to be free problem.
But as Boss Tweed put it in the Gangs of New York, but we're talking different things.
Yes,
okay?
Yes.
What I'm talking about is geopolitical here. This was a move on the part of the Russians, building on the moves that they've made over the last 8 years. Frankly, ever since their invasion of Georgia went largely unanswered in 2008, and that was Bush the Younger who was in office at the time. We're talking about really 8 years of Russia making moves on the global chessboard without really much of a response from Washington, and that needs to change. Now, the notion that Donald Trump would start moving on the chessboard against Vladimir Putin might be comical to many of us, but the simple fact of the matter is the Democratic Party, because we're the only ones who are the only game in town who's going to be doing this now, we have to be the ones to pick up the standard that, frankly, Donald Trump has forced the Republicans to drop, in that, no, it is not acceptable to let Vladimir Putin basically turn anything with any regime within any land within his field of vision into something controlled by his regime against the self-determination of the people who actually live there. That was something Republicans understood for most of my lifetime. It's something Democrats have to take as their own now, not just for themselves, but also for the country and for the world at large, I think.
Well, I think the great irony is the fact that, you know, you had Reagan in the 80s and the evil empire and the strength and tear this wall down, Mr. Gorbachev. And now you have this incredible irony that Donald Trump is friendly with Putin, probably putting in a secretary of state that's been given a high award by Putin. And it sort of just tilts the whole landscape in terms of the response from the party side, and it really makes you rethink what is the Democratic Party, what is the Republican Party. And to me, the great irony is, I actually think if Donald Trump wanted to, given his nature, given his sort of crazy life of Fox responses to so many things, he could be the one who could scare Putin and just simply say, your grandkids, nuclear weapons, 15 minutes if I ever see an email show up of my, you know, my team. That's not going to happen because obviously, for whatever reason, he wants to stay close to Putin.
Well, let me ask this. I was thinking today, why did this story not get more traction in the months of July, September, October? And I'm not sure this is it, but it occurred to me one possibility is that we talk about them today as the Russians. We no longer talk about them as the communists. And I wonder whether, had this been covered as communists are trying to infiltrate or somehow change the outcome of our election, whether the public outcry might have been greater. Obviously, there's a partisan issue. People who are pro-Trump were going to whitewash it. People that were pro-Hillary were going to build it up as maybe even a greater threat than it turned out to be. We still don't know whether it in fact changed the election results or not. But I wonder what could have been done between the months when it became apparent that Russia was behind the WikiLeaks and the actual date of the election to shed more of a spotlight on this problem so that the American voters understood what was at stake here.
That would have involved the press being inclined to ignore Donald Trump's Twitter account.
Why?
Which they were clearly not willing to.
Why? I don't understand how that has anything to do with this.
Because it sucked all the oxygen out of the room. Look, stories about this were circulating through, at least through the fall, and definitely into October. There were plenty of allegations going around. They just never gained traction in spite of some coverage because something else would come up every so often, you know, very quickly to distract them from it. They never drilled down on it.
Yeah, they never drilled down on it. That's right.
And to some extent, I think I think there were a couple of things. Yes, there actually was some coverage on this, and we all remember the Newsweek reporter, whose name eludes me, but I definitely know he wasn't Sidney Blumenthal, despite what the Russian press tried to make him into. And that had, you know, that was, I believe it was right after the second debate, and that got everybody's attention for a while. But I think part of the problem was, and not just that, you know, obviously Trump himself tried to change the subject and he succeeded, but the Clinton campaign itself, I don't think, focused on this as much as they could have. They went back to personal attacks on Trump. Their entire campaign, and this is just my impression looking from the outside, seemed largely to be about, if we hit Donald Trump hard enough personally, and if we make him so much, if we make him enough of a disreputable character in the eyes of the American people, and easily that's a deep mind of vein, then that will be enough to win the election. And clearly it wasn't. I think had the Clinton campaign pushed the Russia angle harder, we might have had a different result today. I think if the Clinton campaign pushed the Putin angle harder than it did, I think the result might have been different. But they spent so much time dealing with all of the personal stuff about Donald Trump that they didn't necessarily focus on the issues in general, and in particular, the danger of Vladimir Putin's ascension. Had they done so, that could have changed some of the results in some of the states that we were talking about.
I was just going to say, you've got to think about how the news cycle went this year. And I think it's very suspicious that the Democrats didn't talk a little bit more about Russia. I mean, we can all take a guess at that. But remember, think of like how crazy the news cycle has been this year. You know, we've had ISIS, Brexit, Zika, Olympics, you know, gun violence, you know, police protests, you know, just basic convention rhetoric that I honestly think it got pushed out in the news cycle, and the Democrats didn't take the opportunity either to walk with it.
It's the responsibility of the campaigns to push a message through all of that. And frankly, that's what Donald Trump did. Where Donald Trump railed about trade protectionism, he did it every single goram day. So he made sure that message got through all the cacophony of the news cycle. Mrs. Clinton's campaign seemed to follow the cacophony more than try to put a message through it, in my opinion.
Well, I think the other thing is that the more attention they brought to the WikiLeaks and to the Russian involvement in that, the more attention they brought to the actual WikiLeaks themselves, because Clinton's campaign tried to distance itself from them, as you may recall, by saying, well, we're not sure if they're legitimate. These are leaked emails. They may have been tampered with. And that by bringing up the Russian involvement, you then were bringing up the documents themselves, which were somewhat damaging to the campaign.
I think on top of that, one of the biggest issues you had is the simple fact that to voters of a certain age, obviously the red bear is something that they all understand. Putin having dropped a lot of that ideological baggage, to a lot of people, it's just not the same thing. And so I don't think, even if you could have disentangled the leaks themselves from their source, I don't think there are a lot of voters who, you know, there are a huge number of voters who weren't going to take notice of it for what it was.
Well, that goes back to what I said. If it had been packaged as communists trying to infiltrate our election, I think it might have gotten more resonance.
Putin has built his entire career domestically on using the local communists as an opposition and a foil. So he would have blown that out of the water within about 5 minutes. The simple fact of the matter is the Democrats have never really, ever for the last 30 years, the Democrats have never really been prepared to say we are willing to strongly and assertively defend America's interests, even if it means ruffling the feathers of a hostile foreign power. The Democrats have always prided themselves on being the dovish party, being the more diplomatic party, being the soft power party. This administration largely faucet its entire history on that and its entire message and its entire narrative. And it came up to bite us in 2016 because we couldn't put forth the message that the voters needed to hear, which was that Russia is on the rise. It is a dangerous dictatorial regime that is interfering with its neighbors and is interfering with us. The Democrats were just in no position to put that message forward.
The Republicans tried putting that message forward with Mitt Romney in 2012, and it didn't really resonate. Gene, what were you going to say?
Well, I was going to say, and they should have. And to me, I mean, I find this terrifying, the Russian involvement in our election. And the fact that Trump is as close as he is to Putin. The fact that Tillerson, the potential Secretary of State nominee, has been given an award by Putin, that to me is just absolutely frightening. And for those of us who remember Soviets and the fear and the 80s and all of that, and then what our parents went through in the 60s with the Cuban Missile Crisis, the fact that Russia is now becoming our enemy again, good for spy movies, good for Cold War movies, but bad for us.
I couldn't agree more. You're right. So we know now that there's a group of senators who would like to investigate this Russian connection. John McCain and Lindsey Graham on the Republican side, Chuck Schumer and Jack Reed on the Democratic side. There's talk of either creating a select committee or a subcommittee of the Senate Armed Services Committee to investigate. Guys, do you think that Mitch McConnell will allow this to get going? And if so, can it get any traction? What can come out of it? Can anything come out of it other than that we're going to find out that our president-elect is even more illegitimate than we thought?
I think it'll be hot air at the end of the day.
You think it'll be hot air at the end of the day, Cliff? Why?
I think any substance will get lost in the media coming down with yet another case of ADD. I think trying to explain to a lot of people why non-communist Russia is a dangerous threat is going to be lost on a huge majority of voters. I'll just say it, we're all geeks here to a certain extent and wonks and so forth, and so we understand more about foreign policy than the average Joe. But but we are not the average Joe, and so even if they were to come out with a slate of quote unquote damning conclusions, I think it would be lost on the average voter.
My biggest concern is this, is that I don't have a preference either way. I just kind of think it may be a futile show, because the problem is when you get into cybersecurity and you're dealing with other foreign countries and other governments, what is going to be the rubric for how we decide what gets investigated? You know what I mean? Is this going to turn into, repetitive witch hunts over and over again? Is this going to strain foreign relations if we do this, in regards to another country down the road? I mean, what is this going to look like? What criteria is used to decide how things like this go forward?
I just want to jump in with one point. And I think the thing
ahead,
is,
Jean.
Yeah. Okay. So, well, I think as a lot of stuff will be kicked around, I think Lindsey Graham and John McCain are serious, sober-minded individuals who are genuinely scared and recognize this threat. But what I think will happen is that 6 months, a year, Putin's going to get sick of Trump. And then we're going to start to see the Steve Bannon emails. And then we're going to start to see the WikiLeaks come out that have the Republican emails and the RNC emails. And then Trump is going to get upset.
Yep.
And then things will happen.
Yep, I think that's right.
But I think the thing is, the way we are talking, I think the way we're talking about this, including, frankly, Kevin, the way you frame the question, has this all backwards. Okay, this is not about just this election. This is not even about just internet security. This is about our role in the world and about how Russia, how the Putin regime, because, the Russian people just want to get on with their daily lives, how the Putin regime, and also the Chinese Communist Party, in my view, but they're not part of the discussion here, how they want to dislodge us from the role that we play and that we have played in the world. And if this just devolves into a discussion about this email versus that email and this hack versus that hack in cybersecurity, then it will just vanish in the sand. But if we have a serious discussion about what is actually happening in the Ukraine, what Bashar Assad is being allowed to do to his own people, to the extent that he is actually so determined to kill as many of his own people as he can, he nearly lost Palmyra to ISIS this afternoon. So this is the kind of thing that we need to talk about. We need to talk about what Russia is doing in the world, who they are re-imprisoning, what Vladimir Putin's vision is for his country and for his regime, which is basically swallow as much of the rest of the world as I can so that my people don't notice how much I'm stealing from them. This is a threat to all of us, not just those of us who are on an internet or not, or not just those of us who vote or not. This is a threat to the country and to the world, and we need to see it that way.
But how can we have this conversation with a man like Rex Tillerson as our potential Secretary of State?
Well, and that's where we as Democrats need to step up and say, this is why we are the loyal opposition here. we are loyal to the country and opposed to this administration because we think this administration is giving the Putinist regime the benefit of the doubt too much. We think this administration is not being there for our friends in the Baltic states and in Eastern Europe, and they are not there for our friends in the Ukraine, and they are not there for those who desperately want to be our friends in Syria, and that they are not there for our friends in Iran who want to actually make their country free but can't do so because of a regime that is being propped up by Moscow. This is the sort of thing the Democrats have to do. We have to, for lack of a better term, go out into the world again, and not just with communiques and diplomatic agreements and everything. We need to have muscle behind our words and say, yes, if the Ukrainian government asks for military aid to fight the Russians, we should give it to them. If there is a Syrian rebel force that is still in existence that wants to free their country from Assad and Daesh, we should help them. I don't expect this administration or the incoming administration to do any of that, but we should send that message to the American people that there is a threat to freedom and democracy, there is a threat to our interests in the world, and this administration, the incoming administration, is ignoring that threat, and you need to elect more of us because we see that threat and we see the world with clearer eyes than Donald Trump does. That's a message we need to take to the American people, and we need to start doing it right now.
Thank you, Woodrow Wilson.
Yeah, who's going to lead? Who's going to lead? By the way, I don't disagree with your point, but who's going to lead this? I mean, the Democratic Party doesn't really have a foreign policy leader anymore. We have some great domestic policy leaders: Elizabeth Warren, Bernie Sanders, Chuck Schumer. But who's going to put forth that message?
There was a time.
No, not there was a time. Who's going to do it now?
Hang on, I'm getting there. Okay. When he was a congressman, that Charles Schumer actually was very good on a number of these issues. Perhaps if he can remember his younger self, he could be one of the folks who steps out here. Perhaps it could be younger Democrats that we don't know, recent additions to Congress, recent additions to the Senate. Heck, even some recent governors can do it. Ronald Reagan was a governor. Ronald Reagan never set foot on Capitol Hill as a senator or as a congressman. But still the party of... I don't quite have that faith in John Kerry that you do, Gene, but that's okay. Perhaps he can see the light on these things. Maybe this time as Secretary of State has shown him. I don't know. But there are, still believe there are some Democrats who remember when Scoop Jackson was in the party, and Scoop Jackson didn't leave the party. He departed the mortal coil in the 1980s, so we're clear. I still think that leadership can be found. And the simple fact of the matter is, if we can't necessarily find it in ourselves right now, there are going to be a lot of Republicans who will be very, very upset at what Donald Trump is going to do, and they may be willing to help us, and we should be willing to open the door to them and let them in.
Okay. DJ, the one problem I see with what you're pitching there is, at this point, when I look at the global stage, we're largely going to be bowling alone on this one. The next president of France is almost assuredly going to be pro-Russian. François Fillon won the right-wing primary, and he's likely going to be facing off against Marine Le Pen in the runoff, and they are both very much pro-Russian. The next prime minister of Italy is probably going to be pro-Russian, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I think, especially after the situations in Iraq and Afghanistan, it's going to be a very hard pitch to turn to the American people and say, you know what, the rest of the world is turning inward on this one, but we have to go out there. We have to shed the blood and treasure in order to, face off against a non-ideological Russian regime for a bunch of people who, in many respects, a bunch of people who have no loyalty to the United States, we have no real responsibility towards, and we're supposed to go out and, throw another $10, $20, $50 billion down, whether it's the foreign aid or defense hole in their interest. I don't see that taking.
Fortunately, Cliff, my span of the globe is a little larger than just France and Italy. I know that the British administration is very concerned about this, especially the Foreign Secretary Boris Johnson. I know that Poland has actually elected a largely anti-Russian government, in part because they are concerned about this sort of thing.
You're right.
There is a problem with Hungary. There is and that's the thing. You know, the last time we forgot Poland, it started a war. Best not to do that. We need to remember Poland. We need to remember the Baltic states. We need to remember. We need to remember Scandinavia. Finland and Sweden are now getting much more nervous about Russia than they were before. Sweden may be very willing to take the pro-American slot that France may leave. And frankly, you know, we talk about how Putin is not non-ideological. He does have an ideology. It's frankly it comes out of the Russian Orthodox Church. It's frankly very racialist, if not outright racist. And it has very much of a whiff of fascism in it. And, you know, my scope is a little broader than just Western Europe. Although within Western Europe, we do still have friends in the British who are very concerned about the Russians. Northern Scandinavia is very concerned about it, to the point that Sweden is actually considering moving off its historical neutrality because they're worried about Russia. The Baltic states and Poland are very scared of the situation in Russia. You have a number of the stans, as they're known, the former Soviet republics, who are somewhat concerned. There is Ukraine, there is Georgia, there is Moldova. These aren't small, insignificant countries. And the fact that France may be more angry at Brussels than at Moscow, something perfectly understandable given how idiotic Brussels is, doesn't change the fact that there are countries in the world who would be willing to join us and help us to restrict Vladimir Putin from trying to swallow everything within his field of vision in Western Europe, in Eastern Europe, and also in the Middle East as well.
You know, when I listen to this, I think it's terrifying because I do feel sometimes that we are, you know, at this real pivotal point in our history and that, you know, we've been so lulled in these past 20 years, you know, having a friendlier Russia, and that now we're sort of falling back into, are we going to end up in another world war? And when you hear, you know, talking and the way we're talking and who's with us and who's not with us and all of that, it's frightening. And I think what's really frightening is the fact that Trump has this relationship, this almost dedication to this individual, and as well as the possible Secretary of State. And it's funny because when we talk about the Democrats as the loyal opposition, I actually think, which has been referred to, that there will be allies in the Republican Party, because I've come to the point, and maybe others will disagree, I don't even really consider Trump a Republican. I consider him this hybrid, this unique thing. And I think the Republicans are going along with him as much as they can because he's got them back into power. He's got both houses. But I think there's so much wariness there.
I agree.
Having been a Republican for 25 years before last May, I can tell you that the Trump infection has felled a good deal more Republican politicians than even my worst fears had. He has turned Mike Pence into a corporatist. He is turning much of the Republican force on Republican caucus on Capitol Hill into corporatists. He is putting his imprint on the party. He did come from outside the party, but he is putting his imprint on the party, and he's not doing it in a good way. It's one of the reasons why I left. And the Republican Party, as we know, Gene, will frankly be unrecognizable, I fear, in about 18 to 24 months.
But he's putting his imprint on now, and they're going with him now. But that doesn't mean it's not a deep bond at this point. And so I think we have to see, he has to take office. We have to see what happens and what he does. If he starts flailing, then I think you're going to see plenty of people scurrying.
Well, the counter is that I think you've seen an increasingly strong isolationist trend within the Republican Party. I will say this side of 2008, and it's been steadily rising. And it wasn't just Trump. It was there with Ron Paul before. And I think in some respects the – you know, Trump was able to hoover up a number of the Paul isolationists as well, after a fashion in this with this one. So basically, yes, there will be some allies in there, but it's not just a quote unquote Trump infection that you're dealing with. It's actually a swing in the party. I mean, you brought up Ronald Reagan, and one point I think I would pain to make is that Ronald Reagan was not anti-Russian; he was anti-communist. And as soon as that window dressing fell off, the Republican Party's reason for staring down the Russian bear largely vanished.
So this has been a very sober conversation tonight. And to lighten it up a little bit at the end, let's talk about something that maybe is a little bit more fun. The possibility of Joe Biden in 2020. Any thoughts on that?
I love a good Biden meme. Can you just imagine if he runs, how much better they will get?
Gene, what do you think? Is it realistic for Biden to be a potential? I mean, it's so early to even consider it, but he floated it himself.
He's floating it himself. First of all, I think he actually would have won this time. I think he would have gotten the Western Pennsylvania. He appreciates the Rust Belt. I think he would have visited Michigan. But I think, you know, he will be older. He's a young 72, 73. He'd be a young 77 up against Trump. But I think 4 years is a long time, particularly at that stage of life. And I think, look, 4 years ago, 6 weeks ago, we didn't think Donald Trump would be president, never mind 4 years ago. And he emerged. 12 years ago, we certainly didn't think Barack Obama, in 12 years, we'd be saying goodbye to Barack Obama after 8 years. We barely knew him. He had just given a speech at the convention and been elected. People come out of nowhere. I think most likely the Democrats, you know, maybe it'll be a Kamala Harris. Maybe it'll be, you know, someone coming out who's younger. I think if they play the generational thing, it could be very powerful. So we'll see.
Okay, and last question, and I'm gonna pose this to my friends Emily and Cliff. You guys voted for the person who won the election, or at least has so far won the election. Any regrets? Has anything that's happened in the interim made you rethink that vote? Again, assuming that I'm right about how you voted, any regrets?
Things are going. I can't say precisely according to the path I was predicting because, quite frankly, I didn't have a specific path I was predicting for things to go, but there's been nothing that has changed my mind since the election.
Okay.
I voted for Trump, and I'll be honest, is the only thing, there are some things about President Trump, or the incoming President-elect Trump, that do give me pause for concern. But until I actually see him in office and I see what he's going to do, I wouldn't have changed my mind at this point.
Okay. Thanks for listening, everybody. Please like us on Facebook at facebook.com/MorePerfectUnionPodcast and share our link on your Facebook timeline so your friends can discover us as well. And if you enjoy political debates and would like to be a part of ours, please join us in our Facebook political discussion group, Open Fire. We're all there, and we'd love to see you there, too. Until next week, everybody, have fun and enjoy the weeks before Christmas.